Project on CITR 101.9 FM. You can find links to our guests' work at www.terry.ubc.ca. Please subscribe to our show on iTunes, download our smartphone app, and check out our Facebook and Twitter pages. The Terry Project is supported by a grant from the Alma Mater Society and the University of British Columbia's Teaching Learning Enhancement Fund. Thank you for listening.
All right.
Well, good afternoon. Tatsuki. Come on in to Language to Language.
Yeah, that song. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say Colin Wee was.
Colin Wee,
is that what you said?
That's right. Yeah. The album is Celebrate.
Yeah, what was the song?
The song that we played was called My Land, Our Ways.
Oh, wow. I really liked what they've done of taking that traditional Caribbean beat and put it to their own song.
And, you know, shortly after they put the album out, they won an award in America, an American Music World Beat Award, and they were nominated for various awards just within 1 year.
Who was writing all that for them?
Well, a combination of between, like, that particular song was a song that was written by Leroy Joe. And he's one of the lead singers and writes the music along with Russell Wallace. And JB the First Lady did a love song on here. It was called True Love. And then they picked a traditional berry picking song, and it accompanied her song of True Love.
Wow.
So it's a combination of stuff, you know?
I really like what our musicians are, stepping up and expressing themselves in a way that's sort of a new tradition, but it's still expressing the old values.
Yeah, they're mixing it up in a really good way.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Yep. Hi.
Peter.
Good afternoon.
How you doing?
I'm fine.
Good.
Ready to start with our show.
Right on. Did you want to give a bit of a translation to the listeners?
Yep. Hemos empezado, buenas tardes, con la canción del álbum Colin Wee and el álbum Celebrate. And the number, what's the number of the song?
Number three.
My Land, Our Ways.
Yes.
Nuestra tierra, nuestros caminos. Y esa fue un lyrics de Leroy Joe. Así que así vamos a empezar hoy, Language to Language.
Yeah. The reason I played that is because before we got here, Woody and I were talking about this recent thing that's going on in our community, which is labeled in the global news as First Nations Carving Out Bridge to the BC Coast. And this article was written by Nathan Vanderclip from the Calgary, the Globe and Mail. And it was published on Tuesday, February 5th. And I'd like to share this with you. Really? Is this the right article, do you think? For the Canadian energy industry desperate to pump oil and natural gas through British Columbia, the single greatest obstacle has been the dozens of First Nations fighting to ensure pipelines are never built. Now, some of the leading figures in Canada's Aboriginal business community are offering a bridge across the province's difficult political landscape. They have formed Eagle Spirit Energy Holding Limited, a company quietly working to create a First Nations-owned energy corridor across northern BC that could serve as a physical line across the province to move natural gas, electricity, and oil.
Yeah, the more recent one is they were talking about also building a refinery, I think, in Alberta so that the oil that's coming across is refined. Yeah, but it still has to get on ships to go somewhere. And this isn't really an issue about oil. It's really about water. Water's the first medicine. Our bodies are 98% water, something to that effect. And so people are going to start fighting wars over who controls water. And we have provincial and federal governments that are doing everything they can to make sure that their business friends get control of that. And just because people are native does not mean that anything's going to be any different. A corporation is a corporation regardless of who runs it. And it has one function, and that's to maximize its profits. They have shareholders that they have to answer to. I worked for a corporation totally owned by First Nations, and I was in charge of a logging company. At one point, more than once, I tried to hold the line on what they were, the environmental stuff. They weren't doing soil stability tests and stuff on slopes. they were cutting too close to the watershed, whatever, and I would stop them. Board of directors told me to back off. The only thing that's important is the bottom line. And so if this eagle spirit energy, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Now, if they're not in the business of making money, how are they going to get investors? They have to have people willing to invest money because they're going to make money from it. And so it's still the same game. One of the principles for achieving and maintaining slavery says, if I can convince you to do what's in my best, if I can convince you that what's in my best interest is also in your best interest, I can. It'll take very little compulsion to make you do what I want you to do. And so just because they've got their name on it, I mean, they've got this big spiritual name, Eagle Spirit. I see cigarettes, American Spirit.
Yeah,
and so they think
spirit.
If they put spirit on it, then this is going to be okay. We're not that naive.
Yeah.
You know, we know what's coming down. Mm-hmm. We've seen it so many times. Rape is rape. Penetration, however slight, mm-hmm. or by whom.
Yeah. Or, yeah. The thing is, you were saying they have to find investors, right? CTV News says that Connect's owners, Aboriginal Business Pitch Alternative Pipeline. And this was written on April the 14th. And it's published by Dear Moore from the Canadian Press. It happened in Vancouver. An Aboriginal businessman and former motivational speaker has teamed up with British Columbia billionaires best known to their ownership of the Vancouver Canucks to pitch an alternative to the struggling Northern Gateway Pipeline. Calvin Helene, the CEO of Eagle Spirit Energy, said the project would include a pipeline linking the Alberta oil sands to a tanker terminal on the BC coast. It would also include an upgrade to refine the heavy bitumen oil produced in the oil sands to a lighter, more conventional, and less controversial product, he said.
Okay. El tema que estamos tratando hoy tiene que ver básicamente con la refinería que se está planeando construir. Y todo, más que la refinería, precisamente el oleoducto. Este es un tema que se viene conversando hace algún tiempo y que obviamente hay partes que están en desacuerdo porque se intervendrán territorios ancestrales y sagrados sobre todo. Entonces estamos viendo cómo las corporaciones intentan tratar este tema y cómo van a ser tocados varios puntos. Se quiere construir un puente, se quiere construir carreteras, en fin, hay mucho que está pasando, pero obviamente también queremos dejar en claro que se tienen que tocar los temas ambientales y sobre todo ancestrales de los First Nations.
But Monday's announcement, which also included the Equiline Investment Group, the company that owns the Canucks, raised as many questions as it gave answers, such as where the tanker port would be located and how many First Nations have signed on.
Básicamente también nos podemos dar cuenta con esta noticia que inclusive la compañía que es propietaria de los derechos del equipo de hockey de los Canucks también estaría involucrada en este negocio.
We're at the beginning of a process, Helene said. Our goal is to learn the social license to operate, to earn a social license to operate. Once again, we are at the beginning of a process, Helene said. Our goal is to earn the social license to operate. The new proposal was endorsed by two small BC Aboriginal communities.
La compañía obviamente ha dicho que lo que está esperando también es obtener las licencias sociales del proyecto para poder empezar a operar.
The Nita Ban Band has 135 members, about 55 of them living on the band reserve near Burns Lake. The Statlian is a band with about 500 members, half of them living in the band community near Fraser Lake.
Hay pequeñas comunidades también que están involucradas en el proyecto y son los que están poniendo justamente el componente social. Es una entidad con aproximadamente 500 miembros.
The Nita Ban had signed on to support the Northern Gateway, said Chief Ray Morris, but have withdrawn their support.
Y bueno, están buscando que exista todo el apoyo para para poder llegar a un entendimiento y que se mantenga la parte social y la parte nativa.
We saw a better project, more inclusion from the get-go, Morris said, with Enbridge. It was a lot of years of struggle. That goes back 12 years when they first came around.
Hace 12 años fue cuando recién el proyecto empezó a, por lo menos, a vislumbrarse o a conversarse, y lo que están buscando es la forma de llegar a acuerdos que sean justos para todos.
Okay, Helene said Eagle Spirit cannot reveal the number of Aboriginal groups on board because it would breach non-disclosure terms. I can tell you with great confidence that we have a substantial number of communities that are interested, Helene said. It doesn't mean we have a deal yet, but it does mean we have heard their concerns. We will continue to consult with them and work with them and take our direction from them. The Eagle Spirit Energy proposal is the third alternative plan to surface since Calgary-based Enbridge ran into resistance from environmentalists and First Nations in BC to its proposed Northern Gateway project.
Okay, Helene, quien es parte de la comunidad, espera que se pueda llegar a entendimientos, ya que proyectos como estos justamente influirían directamente en grandes comunidades de First Nation, y es lo que espera que ahora la compañía Eagle Spirit logre llegar a un acuerdo con ellos, lo que no ha hecho Enbridge desde hace muchos años.
Yeah, well, the way it's being written, Woody, it already sounds like Helene has joined their forces and is talking as if he's already on board.
Oh, yeah, this is something that, like I said, they've been, when it, that first article last year, was it said they're working quietly to do this. But when you take a look at how much money's involved in this, for example, on worldwide, the price for crude oil is approximately $100 a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
It's approximately 50 gallons to, or we'll say 200 liters to a barrel of oil. So they're paying, it's costing, they're selling it for $100, and they in turn are selling it back to us for $1,200 a barrel. We're paying $6 a gallon. You know, they say, well, it's only $1.51 or 52 cents a liter. Well, we'll say about 4 liters to a gallon. And so they're getting $1,200 for that same barrel. So I don't know how many barrels of oil it takes to produce one barrel of refined oil. So again, it's just, somebody is setting up to make a lot of money. That's all it is.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. You know, el tema aquí que pone Goody es que justamente un barril de petróleo cuesta aproximadamente $100 internacionalmente. Y lo que habría que tener claro es cuántos galones se necesitan para hacer, para refinarlo y tener al final gasolina, que en este momento está más o menos en $1.50 el litro, lo que equivale a $6 el galón. Entonces, si hacemos todos esos cálculos y esos números, pues nos vamos a dar cuenta que hay un gran negocio ahí y que se está ganando mucho dinero.
And the one thing that I wanted to add is that the Kitimat, you know, the Kitimat people are involved in making some of these decisions too, because they're the ones that will benefit the most from the pipeline, but they have declined mm-hmm. as well.
Well, I was looking at this business directory.
Okay.
Of business and community directory, and for those people don't know anything about Kitimat, here's what's written about it. The word Kitimat means people of the snow in Tsimshian language. The Haisla name for Kitimat village is Tsimotsa, which means snag beach. Most Haisla continue to carry on the tradition of hunting, berry picking, gathering, and fishing. Every spring, Haisla family groups still travel to the Kamano River for ulligan fishing. At this time, the village is full of the rich smell of smoking fish. After a long, hard North Coast winter, ulligan are the first fish returning to spawn in local rivers. The Haisla use ulligan for almost everything, from food to medicine. Haisla people learn to boil ulligan and make it into grease. They have become experts at making a specialty, especially pure white grease of a quality that's well known up and down the BC coast. Haisla people still trade this valuable commodity with neighboring villages. The Canadian government set aside 1,640 acres of land for the Haisla as reserve land in 1890. So it tells us that fish and water are very, very important. And just because this is Eagle Spirit Energy Holding Corporation that's going to own the pipeline and be responsible for it, does that mean that if they get an oil spill, it's not going to be as bad if some white people were doing it?
So yeah, what do you... Yeah, well, that's true. Un poco lo que podríamos, lo que estábamos, lo que Woody estaba leyendo tiene que ver con este directorio de empresas donde se habla justamente de el impacto y los servicios o facilidades que tiene para la comunidad empresas que trabajan en la industria del petróleo, ¿no?
So when we look at these things, we have to ask ourselves, well, I guess it's another way of expressing it is follow the money. Follow the money and you'll find out what the impetus is to do this. Now, I was a commercial fisherman for many years. And under the system where we fished, if you had a license, you had to fish it. You couldn't lease it out. And it said that a billionaire here in Vancouver owns about 50% of the commercial fishing licenses, which are leased out to fishermen to go out and fish. We have native fishermen who also own licenses. So does it matter who owns the license? It's the fish. It's the resource, if you want to call it resource. But those are our relatives. And so if the only focus is on servicing debt, paying off million-dollar boats, or is the focus on feeding my family, of feeding my community? You know, those are old-fashioned values, but at some point when we start taking a look at what's happening worldwide to the environment and to water especially, then we have to start really asking how much of this stuff do we really need? I go into a restroom. There is an automatic thing that turns the light on and off. The urinal flushes by itself. You put your hand under the faucet to wash your hands, and the water comes on automatically. So everything's run by electricity. How much electricity do we need? And we got people there now that are even getting electric shock things to make their muscles exercise so they don't have to do it themselves. You know? And it's getting to the point of ridiculous.
Where we're wasting energy.
Yeah.
Mother Earth's energy.
Yeah. It's sort of we're treating this planet as though we're God.
Mm-hmm.
We don't give a thought to the other things that have to live. Sure, what if you spill a little bit of oil? What's the big deal? It's just water. What are you going to do when you can't drink water? It's like Chief Yaddle said, when you cut down the last tree and drink the last drop of water and eat the last fish, what are you going to eat? Your money?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. El punto es justamente cuánto estamos gastando y cuánto necesitamos gastar, digamos. Y todos los recursos que se están invirtiendo para poder tener una vida más saludable, digamos, o una vida más cómoda. Ese sería el término. Pero realmente el problema no está en si gastamos los recursos o no los gastamos, sino si no los cuidamos. Y de igual forma sucede con las grandes compañías. Si se sigue el curso del dinero, se podrá entender de dónde viene cada negocio y cuál es realmente las intenciones que están detrás de cada negocio.
Well, I think it's really interesting that these issues are coming up. Not only are we at risk of the Enbridge pipeline, but you know, there are many people who are opposed to it, like the Unist'ot'en people, right? The Wet'suwet'en. They've been being very proactive in their struggle against the Enbridge pipeline, and that they have gone and built like cultural centers and youth centers on top of where the proposed pipelines were to be built. And they started this action years ago, and that actually slowed down you know, the pipeline from going ahead until more people became aware. And they're now have this blockade. They actually have camps, cultural camps for the youth, and also camps where they can go and practice their sovereignty, live off the land, learn how to protect the land and defend the land. And not in a violent way. They're doing it without arms. They're doing it at, say, let's say a spiritual level, for lack of better words, right? But basically, they are practicing and exercising their rights. And they have that right to do that in British Columbia because it's unceded territory. Nothing's been signed over. We've made no deals with the government so far, and especially those people. And then I was also speaking with Kai Kate Hall yesterday on Snow Isle. The listeners here would have heard it yesterday. But she was talking about the importance of language and how it relates to the land and how the taking of the language can destroy a governing system. One word, like the Algonquin, can mean many things. And it can mean a community, it can mean how you interact with each other and how you govern yourself. And so if you take a language, even with one word, the governing system is missing. But I'd like to play a song by Chief Rock, and he was the one that first alerted me to this new alternative business alternative where they're trying to engage First Nations people like Helene. He had a book launch. He invited Chief Rock there. And Chief Rock, as you know, Woody, is like a major activist, likes to exercise his sovereignty. And he found himself at this launch. And so he was really surprised. And we talked a little bit about it. And we'll continue to talk about it down the road. But in the meantime, here he is, Sino Chief Rock.
Up in the game, mind sharp on point, harder than a flame, harder than the rocks, grandfathers in my sweat, medicine, breathe it in deep, never let us forget, ignorance is never bliss, clear my mind, feel the heat, renew my spirit for this evolution, revolution, scramble for that solution, liquefy, bless the waters, giving life, I'll give this life for the next generation coming, chanting my ancestor's song while I'm drumming, shooting elders and women, that's so damn numbing. So war erupts, stand your ground, take it back. No retreat, even in the face of the heat. Mother Earth beneath my feet reminds me why my people will never meet defeat. So keep our circle strong, so we can feel complete. I'm where I belong. Got the RCMP ready for war against all my people who are out no more. Blocking roads, stopping trains on our land. Walk with no fear, no gun in our hands. Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, we fight yeah, we for fight this planet.
Yeah, we ready for war. We're
fighting for Mother Earth.
Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, we're never backing down.
And I do it for all my realest natives in the game. Yeah, I do it for all my realest natives in the game. Got the RCMP ready for war against all my people who are out. Blocking roads, stopping trains on our land. We walk with no fear, no gun in our hands. Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, fight for this planet.
Yeah, we ready for war.
Fighting for this Mother Earth.
Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, we're never backing down.
Deep down in my heart, I know it's just a start. And old Canada, the corporation is racing to eradicate those terrorists, a menace to society, trying to protect the waters and the land as the corporate propaganda tries to expand those pipeline deals. Another case of a criminal with a tie. Who could care less if my whole family dies? Pools of black oil running through the streets. RCMP running loose on the people like a ravaged mutt. It's quite clear who they're here to serve and protect. A mindless, heartless, inhumane monster with a license to kill at will. All for a paycheck. Yo, you best check yourself before you wreck yourself. So stand up. All my warriors come together. Let's unite. They wanna push us to our limits. Let's bring them the fight of their life. Got the RCMP ready for war against all my people who are out no more. Blocking roads, stopping trains on our land. We walk with no fear, no gun in our hands. Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, we fight for this planet.
Yeah, we ready for war.
Fighting for Mother Earth.
Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, we're never backing down.
And I do it for
stop of trains on our land. We walk with no fear, no gun in our hands. Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, fight for this planet.
Yeah, we ready for war.
Fighting for Mother Earth.
Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, we're never backing down.
So what does this all mean? It means it's time to sever the tie. Even if we gotta die, time to try. Separate from this corporation called O'Canada. Wake up, it's never been a nation. Your brain's been on a long vacation. A deep sleep from this English magic grammar. Spells, oil spills, oil kills. Tear down those oil drills. No matter what color or creed, money always equals greed. What wreck a planet for a profit? Come on, stop it. Once this planet is dead, where we gonna go? What we gonna eat? Gonna drink? What you think that 1% was gonna bring you in the ship when they left you to die? And a shout out to all the sellouts, we still got love for ya. Even if you took a no to the queen to be a band member, son, if you know what I mean, huh? Now you know why we fight. We fight for this planet.
Like the RCMP, ready for war against all my people who are idle no more. Blocking roads, stopping trains on our land. We walk with no fear, no gun in our hands. Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, we fight for this planet.
Yeah, we ready for war.
Fighting for Mother Earth.
Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, we're never backing down.
And I do it for all my realest natives in the game. Yeah, I do it for all my realest natives in the game. Got the RCMP ready for war against all my people who are idle no more. Blocking roads, stopping trains on our land. We walk with no fear, no gun in our hands. Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, fight for this planet.
Yeah, we ready for war.
Fighting for Mother Earth.
Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, we're never backing down.
Okay, that was Chief Rock. We're ready for you.
Yeah, we're ready for you now. Like, look out.
You know, this whole concept of somebody, if I don't do it, somebody else is going to do it type thing. You know, back in the States, back in the 1800s, when the famous Custer, who wasn't really a general, rode up there into the Black Hills, he went into Lakota territory. The scouts were Arapahoes and Crows. And here it is, well over 100 years later, and the other tribes are still ostracizing them for having sided with Custer. And yet for them it was a matter of survival. They were trapped between the Blackfeet to the west, and the Lakotas and the Dakotas, Nakota, Assiniboine to the east, and they're being squeezed by from both sides. So for them it was a matter of survival. They had to pick, because if they didn't, then Custer would come and get them too. But as it turned out, Custer and them still came and got them. Well, Custer was dead by that time, but so I think our greatest survival is to hold together and not become fifth columnists. During World War II, there was a Norwegian guy who tried to appease the Germans, and his name was Quisling. And so today, Quisling is still a bad word. And in the States, a man who was a loyalist to the British Crown was a guy named Benedict Arnold. And he's still looked upon as a traitor by the people who fought the British Empire to gain their own country. So this is the problem that Helene and others are going to be faced with. It's said that you can't buy happiness, but if you have enough money, you can rent enough to where you don't know the difference. So is that going to be their legacy if they do get people to do it and then something does go wrong, which it will? It always does. There is no perfect system. And so, you know, this sort of goes back to something else I've been dealing with. which is with our traditional systems. But anyway, you can translate.
Because it's a too long idea. But anyway, el tema aquí está o radica en que muchas veces pensamos o decimos, si no lo hacemos nosotros primero, alguien más lo va a hacer. Entonces, si tenemos ese pensamiento, pues justamente es complicado que los hechos no ocurran o que alguien bajo esa premisa, pues sencillamente tome la decisión y lo haga. Pero la idea está más bien en pensar cómo podemos beneficiar a todos y no solo beneficiar una parte, o si yo no me beneficio, ¿por qué se va a beneficiar el otro? O como ya dijimos, si yo no lo hago, alguien más lo va a hacer primero.
Well, when we get to talk about conflict resolution, something we learned in the residential schools is if you do something wrong, you've got to be punished. So there always has to be a winner and a loser. And the conflict isn't resolved. It just simply spread out. Now you have a disgruntled loser and you have a triumphant winner. When we look at our traditional systems, conflict resolution was something that was a normal part of everyday life because prior to the European arrival, there was no privacy. You didn't have your own room. Everybody lived in one common room. So it didn't matter whether this was a teepee, a longhouse, a chikee, igloo, yurt, hogan. Everybody lived in a common room. So there's always the possibility of somebody brushing against somebody else, which can cause somebody some discomfort, and so you have conflict. So to deal with that, indigenous peoples developed ways of not only avoiding conflict or resolving conflict, but how do you avoid it?
Bueno, el tema también empieza en que el sistema nos ha llevado a que siempre tiene que haber un ganador y un perdedor. Alguien está dando más, alguien está recibiendo más, alguien está recibiendo menos, por lo tanto está perdiendo. Esto también sucedió luego del arribo de los europeos a América, y por eso antes de que esto suceda, pues no habían, por ejemplo, en una casa, en un iglú, en una choza, en una cabaña, no habían divisiones y era un cuarto común para todo el mundo. Era un síntoma, sinónimo, símbolo, si se quiere, de igualdad.
So we can say that society, the members of the societies, were living a very delicate dance in which everybody avoided causing somebody else discomfort. It's sort of like that flock of birds that's continually changing direction. And they do it without colliding with each other. The wings don't brush or hit each other. And so they avoid brushing against each other. So this is what people had to learn how to do. And that's what the values of our cultures were, is how do we avoid that? And one of the principles was a person's stature is determined by how tall that person is, not how small that person makes someone else look. And so if someone says something demeaning, say to me, immediately I recognize that this person is feeling small enough to try to make me look small so he can feel bigger. And so when this person does that, instead of commenting and saying something mean back, I smile at him and say thank you. Because I know what's going on. So this way, there's no conflict because it takes two to have an argument. So we can avoid the conflict by simply recognizing what the other person is doing. And some of it, one of the rules was that the younger deferred to the older. So if my older brother was going to do something, I would always hold back because I'm the younger brother. If there's a situation where we're part of a meeting or something, my older brother would speak first or would turn to me and indicate that I speak. So we always knew what the rules were, and it was sort of social control by obligation and negotiation. But it wasn't just, that's the law.
Hmm.
And that's really what's happened all throughout Latin America, is you have absolute laws about how to behave. You break the law, and that's the same way it is here. You go to court, somebody has to enforce that law.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in our system, we didn't have cops. If somebody managed to really cause somebody some real discomfort, we had a person who was called the boss of the speaking. And the people would go and they would talk to this person. But that person did not try to decide who was right or who was wrong. But there was a ceremony for restoring the balance so that each party can be restored to the point they were at before the, we'll say, infraction occurred. And so it's sort of like if you're in a beehive and one bee gets mad and goes and stings another, if they start fighting, it tears up the whole hive. Because we are social beings, we are social animals, and we need to have that harmony.
I have a question at that point. You have a jerarchism also, right?
In the tribes, no.
No?
No, not
how that works and how's the difference with the others?
Well, the difference is when you have what we call a command-structured society, which the European model is, because somebody's always got to be at the top of the pile and somebody's always got to be the leader. Whereas in what we call our traditional societies, it's called Gudingais Hansum. This is where it functions based on cooperation and harmony and trust, whereas the other one is focused on competition and don't trust. And so in the one don't trust, the laws were made to protect your money, to protect your property. And so the law is not fair, and it's not intended to be fair, because it's there to protect your property and your money, not necessarily protect people. Whereas in our system, we didn't have black letter law. There's no laws written out that says you absolutely do this, but there were certain things which were absolutely forbidden. One was incest. And the reason for that is because the survival of the entire society was dependent upon knowing who was related to whom. It's all about family. That's the whole heart of it. Whereas in the other system, they don't care. Or they'll say it's only your father's side that's important, and they'll follow that. So in a system of jurisprudence, the system is not fair and is not intended to be fair. It's to balance the equities and find out who is guilty or not guilty. In our system, we don't even have words for guilty and not guilty. Either you did it or you didn't. In the system of jurisprudence, I can kill another human being and be charged with murder, mm-hmm. and I say not guilty. Well, maybe I was feeling bad that day, or maybe there's some mitigating circumstance, but the fact is that person is still dead. In our system, it was dealt with in that way, that sometimes you didn't mean always that you're going to lock that person away for life or whatever, but the other family would have a say in what happened. For example, if I was to kill somebody in your family would sit down and decide who in my family was of equal value. And then when you decided on that, you'd come and tell my family who you had selected. And the probabilities of me being selected, I'm the one who did the killing, mm-hmm. are extremely remote for a very good reason, which it's kind of hard to describe in English, but they would select, say, my brother. And then there was a ceremony in which somebody from your family would dance with a spear. And the one selected in my family would dance with his arms crossed across his chest like he's protecting himself from being hit. And during this ceremony, the one from your family would take his index finger of his left hand and his thumb down like it's sort of like a pistol and point at the member, the one they selected from my family. Now, if this person kept his arms closed and dropped his head, he's agreeing to fill the void in the family caused by me. So now this person is going to live in your family, but this person no longer has a lineage. This person can't marry. This person is sort of like a slave, I guess, mm-hmm. you might say. Aldanga, he has no name. But if this person chose rather than to live that life, but to die instead, would simply put his arms straight out, sort of like somebody nailed on a cross, and keep his head up, whereas the representative from your family would run a spear into the side by the liver and kill him. Or it could be they would come to the family and say, this person caused this damage to my family and we want reparations. So they would go to the grandfather of this person. And so there was what was called blood money. But once these things were done, it was settled. Everything is back to normal. Balance has been restored. It doesn't continue on and on and on and on grudges. That means that's the end of it. And sometimes there was a ceremony in which you wash away the tears. It's where sadness is dispelled. So it's quite different from a system of jurisprudence that says that the enforcement is to protect the rights of society. It has nothing to do with the victim. Hmm. In fact, the victim has no place in a trial court. So that's
a big
briefly
difference.
The difference.
Yeah, it's a big, big difference.
Yeah.
Because to me it sounds like the real punishment, it's like, in our culture, it's like to be in jail, you know, being in four walls all the time. You don't have your freedom. But in your culture, it's more like you build your own jail.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like you have no name, you can get married, all the things that you mentioned, you know. So it's completely different, but it's a different point of view. I mean, if we...
And it's an indeterminate sentence, which is not permitted in modern law. So what can happen, though, is that if your family agrees to it, that the family of this Halanga could buy him back.
Hmm. Okay.
But then you don't just go immediately and ask for this, because there has to be a settling down. When everything is settled, all the grieving, the whole year and the rest of it's passed, all the things that ceremonially have to be done, then somebody from my family would approach your family, or they would get an intermediary. Somebody's uncle would go and talk and say, is there something we can do to change the situation? And so that way, it's not like you're just bought and sold. They can't sell you to anybody else. You know? But when the Christians came along, they saw this as an opportunity, because here my brother is dying for my sins. And he's got his arms outstretched like he's Jesus on the cross, and you got the Roman soldier with the spear running it through his side.
So
it's rather opportunistic, you know. And in the States, there's a famous case down here called In Re Crow Dog, in which a Lakota, somebody killed another person. And so the family paid off what's called blood money, blood payment. But the white settlers were so incensed that this guy could get away with murder that they went to the U.S. government, and the U.S. government enacted a law called a Major Crimes Act. And so what they did was that this will apply to Indians on reservations, or just that these seven crimes, if you commit one of these crimes, the federal government can bring you into the court and try you in their courts. So that became how that came about, was because those white settlers couldn't see somebody getting away with murder. He didn't get away with murder. Crow Dog didn't. His family had to pay for a very long time. not just him, but his whole family.
Do you believe, is there any way that we can find a balance right now? I mean, because we are living together and we're part of this entire system. You know, do you believe there is some way that we can find a balance? I'm always thinking in balance because we are so different. You know, I come far away from South America and living here now in this culture and trying to be part of it. And you're also being here as a First Nation. You know, we're together at the end. So my question is, do you believe that we can find some point in the middle where we all together can be more flexible and we can agree in something?
Well, when you talk about flexibility, who's got to be flexible?
I mean, all of us.
Because what we talked about when you first came here was the word trust. Mm-hmm. And our system is based on that, whereas the other system is not.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we trust people whose primary goal is to get to the top of the pile, to be number one, to have the most money, to have the most property, and all those other things, whereas for us, it's how do we survive as families, as people. And so the one thing about, I'll say, an alcoholic is that it's always an issue of control, that this person is aggressive and will always have this issue of control. And that's what a command-structured society is always about, control. Who's going to control? And so in order for this to happen, you have to stop trying to control me. You have to agree, I'm not going to try to control you. But this means you have to learn to control yourself. And stop controlling your wife, stop controlling. Because in the Haida language, a chief, Ngang I Tlak Das, literally means a big boss who can't give orders. If you're the village chief, it doesn't mean you can speak for the whole village. You can't order anybody to do anything. You can't give away or sell any of the assets of the village. You can't do that even if you're the chief. If you're a house chief, it's the same deal. So, again, the schism is between trust and cooperation, whereas competition and not trust. So how do you work around it? And I don't believe in bridges. They all get old and they fall down. But how do you remove the obstacles to it? It means that that world there has to learn to know us as well as we know them. But they always avoid trying to learn anything about us, because then they'll have to start giving on some of the things that they consider their values. One value is you can never have too much. So I see a commercial when they're asking about how much money is enough for retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't know. Well, how much is too much? I have no idea how much too much is.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with ours, it's how much is enough? Well, two is enough.
Yeah.
You know, we can answer you.
Well, for instance, the Haida people, like, work with argillate, right, as a medium that they carve out of. And you can only find argillite in Skidigate.
Yeah.
There's only one spot you can find it, right? And the law, I guess, if you want to call that, around the argillite is you can only take as much as you can carry.
Okay.
And there's still plenty of argillite there. It's bountiful in this one little area, right, Woody?
Yeah, that's what they call social control by obligation and negotiation. It's what the people agreed on,
mm-hmm.
is that to keep other people from just going in and taking as much as they can and selling it, because it does have a great deal of monetary value. But it has more value to the people as to what it represents rather than how much you can get for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you sell a carving of argillite, the artist is selling his work, and it just happens to be in a medium of argillite.
Mm-hmm.
If he carves a totem, he's not selling you the wood. He's selling, or she's selling you, what they've put into it.
And you can tell the wealth of a people by how much they don't have rather than how much they have.
Yeah, how much do you give away? And so this whole potlatch system is how much you're giving away.
Yeah.
And so that's the measure of your wealth.
Mm-hmm. But, and how much can you stand the heat, too, is the other thing. Because we have these big fires, and they fill it with ooligan grease, which, again, is a symbol of wealth, because ooligan grease costs a lot of money, and they're throwing it into the fire. and it heats up the place. And if you can't stand the heat and you have to leave for some reason, then you're obligated to throw a potlatch, and you're ashamed in front of everybody. So there's many ways of looking at us.
See, the way that economic system works is that in the money society, the most efficient use of, we'll say, the dollar is if you can take $1 into your village, your community, and it gets spent 7 times in that village before it goes out to anybody else, you're getting the maximum value for that dollar. But in our system, if we have a potlatch and I give a whole bunch of things away, then it's distributed to the whole village. And somebody else will do a potlatch, and now I'm getting gifts back from them. And so it's always keeping kind of a balance, rather than that the person with that big house on the hill or the white. Somebody's trying to call me. I think.
Somebody's trying to call me too.
Everybody's calling.
Yeah, we're like, our system is very interesting. I missed that last part you were saying there, Woody. Sorry.
Well, you know what with the potlatch system, it's always trying to manage a balance between the wealth. Because you're redistributing and redistributing. Mm-hmm. If you have nothing, you're good for nothing, you're still going to get
something.
You're
still going to get something, yeah. Especially for being there. Like, they just had a potlatch in Alert Bay. It was thrown by the hereditary chief, Bobby Joseph, who was responsible for the Walk for Reconciliation. He headed that. And he just threw a big potlatch in Alert Bay. And a big part of that potlatch is the giving. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end, everybody gets a little bit of something, just for being there and for witnessing the events of that potlatch, who got what name and why, and who danced what dance, and this kind of stuff. So your responsibility as a witness, once you get that gift, it's a symbol of what you witnessed, what you saw. It's your gift for being there, and your responsibility. Say, like, they gave me a blanket, and Woody came to my house and said, geez, I like that blanket. Where did you get it? It opens up the dialogue for me to share my experience with Woody. And I can say, I got that at the potlatch in Alert Bay, where I saw Chief Bobby Joseph give so many names to so many of his grandchildren and his nieces and nephews and so on and so forth.
So yeah. You're paid to be a witness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If there's nobody witness, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Somebody's sure trying to call me.
And so the one thing that I wanted to tell you is that Earth Day was last week. And again, on Snow White Elf yesterday, we identified that, you know, to First Nations people and Indigenous people all over the world, Earth Day is every day. It should be a way of life, you know. And so there's going to be a rally. It's called Waking Up the Masses, Earth First, on May 1st to May 4th, 2014. That's going to be a long rally. Okay, it's only 1 week left until they invite you to the West Coast rally. If anyone is interested in speaking at this rally after the march on May 3rd, please message a young lady, Shannon Hecker, and their theme is government corruption, so you can cover a variety of topics. There are 3-minute maximum, so please keep that in mind when you're thinking about what things you want to talk about at this rally. Rally starts on May 1st on Main in the street, on the street. May 2nd, there's going to be a stick game in solidarity at Grandview Park, which is located on Commercial Drive. And then on May 3rd, March 3rd, against government corruption from Vancouver Art Gallery in solidarity at the Robson Library. And then on May 4th, there's going to be a mini powwow. What kind of a rally is this? There's going to be a mini powwow at Oppenheimer Park. So that should be exciting, don't you think?
It sounds great to me.
I think I like the idea of the bone game. Sounds
fun.
Oh,
yeah, we did that for a thing called story weaving.
Mm.
We had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, I saw that. That was great. Right in the middle of the play, you guys broke out into a Slahal game.
Yeah.
Who does that but an Indian? And speaking of Urban Ink, because that storyteller that you were a part of is also doing another production on May 22nd called Sal Capone. And it starts on May 22nd to the 30th, and it will be at the Roundhouse.
Wow.
Check it out.
I have to go see it.
Yes, it's going to be great. Do you have any other announcements either one of you would like to share with the listeners? It's 3 o'clock on the dot.
It's 3 o'clock already.
Yeah, okay, it's 3 o'clock. So shall we see you next week, guys?
Okay.
Yeah? Yeah. Are you all ready
for it? We'll be here.
Let's do it.
Okay, hasta la próxima semana. Chao.
Chao.
It feels real good to be true.